The Guardian.
Guardian Holiday Offers is pleased to bring you a great selection of worldwide trips from our trusted partners. From cultural tours and adventure holidays to river cruises and cottage breaks, we have something for everyone. To find your perfect break, go to guardian.co.uk/travel with us. That's guardian.co.uk/travel with us.
Football Weekly with James Richardson.
Name-calling, comedy-falling, enthralling. What a Sunday it was in the Premier League. We round up the action in today's pod. Marvel at the Merseyside derby. Tiptoe around the Stamford Bridge controversy with more slurs than Sir Alex after his post-game bottle. And look forward to Chelsea and United doing it all over again Wednesday in the new-look League Cup, the Capital One Cup, or in short, Cock Cup. Elsewhere, Mancini versus the Cheeky Boy. We wonder what's a rumbling at Man City. Check out the rest of the Premier League weekend. Read out your posts and tweets and bang on about poncy foreign stuff to sound a bit sophisticated. All that and so much more in Football Weekly. Right, hello everybody. On board today, it's Greg Bukowski.
Hi James.
Barney Roney.
Hello.
And adding a much-needed touch of machismo to the affair, it is Amy Lawrence.
Grr.
I hate football so much. Your words, Barney, this morning. Your words.
Well, speaking around the subject.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, let's see if we can bring a little smile to your face with some of the good things from the beautiful game. Good things like Chelsea Man United. What a stonking match that was at Stamford Bridge.
It was a brilliant game of football, and it was. It looked like it was. That was all we were going to be talking about until when it was 2-2, and I thought Chelsea were going to win the game.
Yeah,
you know, it was a brilliant rally. I mean, we talked last week about the problems of being forced to like Chelsea, and this was again. I mean, I thought they were brilliant in their comeback. There's a real spirit there. They came back in the right way. They were playing the front three behind Torres were playing brilliantly, and then it was kind of ruined by.
Refereeing decisions?
Yeah, refereeing decisions.
Right. Did you feel Torres that wasn't a red card?
No, he shouldn't have been booked for that.
Shouldn't have been booked, Amy?
Well, I mean, there's that discussion about whether or not he might have got more punishment for the original foul, but I think the second yellow was pretty ridiculous.
Harsh. I'd say the first one was just clumsy, though. I don't think there was any malice in it. And
not that kind of player?
Well, I wouldn't go that far. Right. But yeah, I don't think the second one was a booking either. And it seems to be happening more in the game now that the referees either give a yellow card for the dive or a yellow card for the foul, and there doesn't seem to be anywhere in between anymore.
I have to say, I mean, just as a separate thought. I mean, do you remember there was a period where these kind of games between the bigger clubs were incredibly dull?
Yeah.
We had a long succession of 1-0s and 0-0s, and it was the shit on a stick era.
Yeah, very
much. If you remember.
So. Yeah.
And these games have actually started to be a bit more interesting. And I think that has got something to do with the way they're being refereed and slight tweaks to the way the games are run.
Certainly. I mean, last season, there were an astonishing number of goals in the games.
It was a brilliant game before you just said it was a fantastic game, and then the refereeing is what made it.
Yeah, but it's not two sides of the same coin, isn't it? I mean, I think that there are some changes which have helped these games to flow slightly more.
Yeah.
And part of the same thing is you maybe end up with...
Ferguson not playing his diamond helped that one flow a bit more last night, I think.
Interesting story behind that, Greg.
Is there?
Margaret, the granny from Rochdale.
Yeah, what's she got to do with it?
Well, he name-checked her in his post-game press conference. She had rung up MUTV to say, for goodness sake, Fergie, stop with this midfield diamond nonsense.
Yeah.
And he said afterwards, yeah, I did that. And so he went with the three in the middle and the two players out wide and that pinned back Chelsea's full-backs. And that's why they had that rocketing start where they really caught Chelsea sleeping. And then
the midfield got overrun like it does, but at least that's exciting.
Well, it was exciting. Yeah. It was. And then Chelsea came back and, Mata's goal sparked that recovery. And then Clattenburg burked it up again, didn't he, with that ridiculous decision on the offside for the Chicharito goal. What's going on there?
I just think that, I mean, last time I was here with Barney, I think we had a really big ding-dong about the use of technology.
Oof.
And we agreed vehemently. Disagreed vehemently, rather.
Yeah.
I was thinking about it last night, and I just thought you had three games over the weekend where there were very obvious decisions that it would have taken an extra 5 seconds to try and get right. And the thing I think now is that if you actually ask referees, and I know that's a difficult thing because they don't want to ever say anything.
Plus, they use such awful language. I don't want to talk to them.
Well, there is that. But referees must deep down want help.
Right.
How can they not? How can it be fun to be a referee,
right,
to be on the receiving end of the kind
no
of
fun.
stuff that's going on. They're obviously dishing it out on some occasions now, or allegedly. But, you know, not making this just about Mark Clattenburg. If you look at the other decisions over the weekend that affected QPR and that affected Liverpool, it's absolutely inexcusable now. There's no reason whatsoever to justify not making a change and not helping referees.
We weren't going to talk about this, but I've got to give you a right reply, Barney. 60 seconds to reply. Or if you don't want to, let's not bother.
No, I'm not interested in talking about it.
I'll move on then. You mentioned the Clattenburg allegations. Obviously, we don't want to get into all that until we know exactly what happened. It does sound an extraordinary allegation, but let me just mention this. Brian Guiney tweeting, and he says, if Clattenburg is guilty of racist language, will Chelsea fans boo their own players? Like that one, Brian. Like that one. Anyway, now, moving on. Forever United tweets in and says, looking at the opening nine games, do the panel believe RVP will be the difference in the title race this year? Do you?
Probably, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, no. I think if Van Persie had been playing for Chelsea yesterday and Torres for United, I think the game would have, you know, gone the other way, and I think Chelsea would have won it. It just, when Van Persie gets the ball, he take one or two touches and then he's got a shot off. I think Torres now, he's kind of taking three or four touches going down a blind alley and then getting crowded out. I just think Van Persie's...
Or just going down, in Torres' case.
Oh, well, yeah. Quite possibly.
No. Didn't you say referees are to be credited with the massive upsurge in drama and goals and entertainment in the clashes of the big teams? Isn't it the fact that they've all just stopped bothering with defending?
Well, defending is much more difficult now. The rule changes have not helped, particularly. And I mean, the kind of very troubled business of offside hasn't really helped. I mean, you called the Hernandez a ridiculous decision. Well, it's not really.
Isn't it?
It looks ridiculous on television when you stop it and put a line along the pitch.
It's not a ridiculous decision.
But he was running backwards. It's very hard to get that right.
It's ridiculous that they're not helped, is what I think. It's not a ridiculous decision.
Well, it looked ridiculous to me.
Well, that's because you saw it stopped with a line drawn on the mirror. Oh, yeah, look, he's offside.
But then he can be helped.
But that's not what human beings see.
I know, but it's a goal and it can be checked within 5 seconds.
It kind of is what human beings see if they're standing in line with the action and can look just straight across the pitch. That fella is 2 yards to the right.
They're standing in line. They can't be in line with two things. They're watching the guy playing the ball and they're watching the line as well. They're trying to see two things at the same time. They have got two eyes, but the eyes tend to go in the same direction. It's very hard to get your eyes to go in two different directions at the same time.
All right, should we all have a try at that? Can you make your eyes do that?
I can do it.
Only at a certain time in the morning.
Okay, Amy, can you do that? It's really unsettling. Barney's going to do it, everybody.
I can do that.
Oh, he did it. That's horrible. That's so wrong. Okay, well, Man United anyway. So they closed to within a point of the lead. As for Chelsea, Shakhtar midweek, and then this, they've conceded 7 goals in 3. Is this the start of the annual Chelsea November implosion?
No.
What? No?
I think that the Shakhtar game is the one that you worry about. I don't think that when they go back and look over the tape of the Man United game, they're going to be too disappointed. There were obviously the defensive slackness that allowed Man United to take the lead they will be addressing, but I think overall the progress that they've made, the way that they're evolving as a team, there's plenty.
But they always look great in the first couple of months and then blow up. That's what happened to AVB.
Yeah, but I don't think Scolari. This is the same situation.
I think the last game of last season, I forgot. I mean, they won the Champions League.
The difference is some of these players like Mata, Hazard and Oscar have got a bit more freedom to go about what they're doing, and they're not being told to do anything other than just go out there and kind of confuse the opposition, and they're doing that. So.
A unanimous verdict from the panel then. Amy.
No, I was just going to say, I think Chelsea's issue really is whether or not they get to January with... only Torres as their centre forward and him not scoring obviously that many goals at the moment. I would expect them to address that in January, but it might cost them between now and then.
Isn't that an outmoded way of looking at it? His role there at the front.
I think he's playing superbly well, and he's enabling those three.
Because they get more goals from defenders and midfielders than anybody else, and so it doesn't matter that he's up there. That's the way football teams play now. They have somebody up front in the Heskey role, and then everybody else.
Yeah,
okay.
So if Torres gets injured, who then plays that role?
Well, anybody can. That's the point.
Well, Heskey's actually doing very well.
True, actually. Heskey is doing well. Mm-hmm. And lucky viewers in Australia can follow it with Heskey Cam.
Is that right?
Yeah, they've got a dedicated Heskey Cam. I don't know if you have to pay extra for the Heskey Cam.
But you could just
channel.
Have it on a loop. Can you just have a man falling over?
No, Barney, no. He scored 2 in a big win for the Newcastle Jets this weekend, which put them against Melbourne Victory, ironically enough.
Did you see his amazing overhead kick?
Oh, Greg, did you?
In which he sliced it and it went in off someone's arm on the line. And
hey.
And then this fella on the line said, no, give a penalty, don't give the goal.
But they gave the goal?
Yeah, he gave a goal.
So he got
Heskey
a brace?
Wheeled away. He got a brace, yeah.
Right, he but wheeled he, away
it's
like
a kind
handside.
Of overhead kick that could have been accompanied by like some kind of tuber or something.
Super stuff. And other tuba-like noises. Anyway, yeah. Newcastle Jets, of course, you know, listeners, are currently level at the top of the A-League with another team. Good. Now, anyway, Chelsea and Man United doing it all over again. I think it's Wednesday, isn't it? Wednesday in the League Cup. That'll be exciting, won't it? Will they put out proper teams and stuff? Will there be a real edge to this game after Sunday's events?
No, they'll put out a reserve team.
Really?
Yeah, they always do.
Oh.
Well, okay. A semi-reserve team.
Still, Chelsea's reserves, Man United's reserves. Moving on then. If doubts over whether that 3-2 should have stood exists, there was quite the opposite earlier on Sunday at Goodison Park. Liverpool's 3-2, which should have been given, wasn't. And Greg, you must feel hard done by.
Yes, I do. But I'd say on the balance of play, I think 2-2 was a fair result.
Really?
Yeah, I think. I mean, it was a very odd derby because it was very open, which they're not usually that open. First 15 minutes, Everton looked frightened and they looked like they were anxious, which a lot of, you know, they'd been accused of being like that in derbies, and because there was a lot of expectancy. But Liverpool scored the 2 goals, and then Everton after that came out and controlled the game. And I think Kevin Morales was fantastic for Everton. He pulled the strings, and when he went off at half time, that benefited Liverpool. As did Rodgers' tactical change at half-time, which I thought was really bold. And
what did he do, Craig?
Well, Everton were controlling the game, and Rodgers was obviously very unhappy about this. And he went to 3 at the back. He took Wisdom off, and he put Shelvey on and took Suso off as well. And he just crowded them out, because Everton were pushing on and they were getting a lot of men in the box, and Liverpool looked quite vulnerable. They didn't defend well for the 2 goals that they conceded, and they looked a lot stronger. But then Liverpool played on the counter-attack in the second half, which is, you wouldn't necessarily expect that of a Rodgers team. And while Everton still controlled the majority of the game, Liverpool looked dangerous on the break. So I thought it showed that he was thinking about the game, and it did catch Moyes out. And
plenty of positive signs there for Liverpool fans.
Yeah, I mean,
there's a plan B under Rodgers as well.
Well, yeah, I mean, he showed that. He put Sterling up front just behind Suarez, and he played very well. And yeah, I mean, he did show that he's not just about trying to control games, and if you can't control them, he'll just, you know, let things go and lose a game. So, and I think the fans are quite behind him because he's brought Suso through Sterling, he bought Allen, he's got Shelvey he's very keen on as well, and I think there's a lot of young players there now who might end up forming the kind of framework for a future team. It's not about Reiner, Gerrard and Carragher like it used to be in the past, you know.
Oh, interesting. Apparently scouts from Liverpool have identified another bright young prospect over in the east. One Didier Drogba. Any truth to this notion that he might be turning up on loan because the Chinese season has finished with another victory for Guangzhou Shanghai under Marcello Lippi, interestingly enough. Yeah.
Well, I'm sure Liverpool would love Drogba to join him on loan, but I don't know. I mean, I don't know what kind of wages he'd demand. I don't know if he would come back to play.
It would
England
be a Chinese
after.
Takeaway in a very real sense. Worthy
yeah,
to
it,
him.
It would, but I've heard he's not a bad player, that Drogba. He could have a bright future.
All right, well, there you go. That was a terrific first half and a slightly less terrific second half, but a good game all in all. Of course, to mention the League Cup. Oh, hi, Amy.
I was just going to say, I liked David Moyes' reaction to the Suarez celebration.
You mentioned Suarez.
What a nice man he is, David Moyes.
Yeah.
So reasonable.
Yeah. It was incredible. It was very. It was almost unreasonably reasonable. He was over reasonable. Is there double negative going on there?
Do you not think that he actually said all that with his teeth clamped together?
Having seen the way he stood up when Suarez first dived in front of him, and then compare that with the post-game press conference.
But he's not the manager, so it would have been.
Well done. Yeah. I'd have done that.
He could have inflamed the situation. He didn't. He was very reasonable.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, then. How about Suarez?
Anyway, Suarez played very well, and he was brilliant. Plays best when he's angry. So I think if you wind him up, you're not doing your team any favours in the first place. So because he's just
on the basis of this match, but plenty of other games, he's looked too wound up to score.
Well, possibly, but I do think that he causes. I mean, there's the accusation that he isn't the best finisher, and perhaps that's just the case. He's not the best finisher. Not that he's off. You know, not that he's too wound up. But yeah, in this particular instance, I think he caused so much havoc that I think he creates chances for other players as well. You know,
right. Creates havoc and headlines. He scored a goal. He set up another one. He had his comedy dive for the ha-ha moment with David Moyes. He had the horror tackle.
That's more disappointing for a Liverpool fan to see than any of his other antics. So.
Right. And the disallowed winner, of course.
Wasn't it?
Yeah, no, I think it was, yeah. And that's the type of anger that you don't like to spill over.
Yep.
It's fine when it results in a goal or, you know, or a comedy dive.
But he's too good a player for that not to be deliberate. I mean, he's very much in control of what he does with his feet. He's a very weird player, Suarez. Have you noticed he's constantly in this dialogue with the referee? He's already appealing for a penalty before he actually hits the ground. It's an instant reaction. It's almost like a kind of weird tick.
All right, well, an exciting game. I'd mentioned the League Cup and the many enticing fixtures there. How about this one? Liverpool hosting Swansea. Brendan Rodgers up against his old club.
Yeah, he's going back down there.
Is it a big cup for Liverpool, this, the League Cup?
Well, I mean, it's the one pot we've got in the cabinet at the moment. So
right, cool.
It would be, I think he'll take it pretty seriously. It's not a Thursday night game, yeah. I think he'll put out a decent team against Swansea.
And, all right.
I've no idea which way it'll go, though, because I'm sure he'll throw him, you know, he'll be a few youngsters in there amongst some of the experienced players.
Right. Okay, in other League Cup news, you've got Reading taking on Arsenal, Amy. Silverware for the Emirates?
Let's not jump the gun here.
All right.
I think it's a nice opportunity to see some of those forgotten players who emerge from the graveyard, like Skrilacci and Shamak and
Arshavin.
So on. Well, actually, Arshavin did well.
Was that a Halloween reference emerging from the graveyard?
Incidental.
Right. Okay.
But yeah, Arshavin actually did well on when he came on. There was no intention for Wenger to play him at all.
Right.
Because you're in a game against the bottom place team against QPR and playing with absolutely no zip at all. And he wasn't warming up. Arshavin wasn't sent to warm up at any point in the game. He didn't have his shin pads on. He didn't have a shirt on. He wasn't ready.
Right.
And when Jovinho got injured, the sort of sudden need to get someone on the pitch. So he wasn't expected to play and then actually delivered at the sort of a rare moment of danger, which led to the goal. Another offside goal.
But. Super. In other League Cup news, you had your Sunderland Borough, which is the Tees Weir or Weir Tees Derby, I think. Yeah. And, Swindon Aston Villa. Swindon, Paolo Di Canio's Swindon, fresh from putting four past Stevenage at the weekend. And I reckon he'll have his team well and truly fired up for that one. The Robins, of course, Swindon. And Aston Villa, they're there for the taking, aren't they? And it's at Swindon. Crikey. Looking forward to that one. That's, anyway, it for part one, I'll say. Coming up in part two, more Premier League action and crazy posts. Also on Sunday, because it was a busy day, wasn't it, in the Premier League, you had Saints taking on Spurs. Yeah, did you enjoy that one?
Saints have conceded 26 goals now. 26, that's almost three a game. I think you'd probably say Saints might be going down.
Well, yeah.
Old Nigel Atkins.
All sorts of problems there. And controversy for Boric, who apparently, allegations are, he threw something at his own fans after they called him out for, I think, Spurs' second goal. They'll be on their fourth keeper of the season, too.
Was he returning a missile?
I think he was, yeah. I'm not sure. Or maybe there's some suggestion it was a water bottle, in which case it might have been Model's own. Not sure. In other news, on Sunday, you had Newcastle beating West Brom at the death. Second week in a row this has happened to West Brom. The good news for Newcastle is that Cisse's back scoring, and it was Cisse's back scoring, literally, because it just, you know, it just collided off
his first goal of the season. I mean, there's always that thing about he just needs one to go in off his back, and now we can actually test if that theory is true.
Right.
He'll now score in five games in a row.
Cool. All right, then. Anyway, poor old West Brom. All very unfortunate for them. There was a cracking match between Reading and Fulham on Saturday. Did you enjoy that one, Amy? You're nodding.
Yeah, there were some really good goals in that game. Some really well-taken goals.
Berbatov's playing very well for Fulham, and yeah, it's just surprising, you know, another team didn't come in for him because he's still got a lot to offer. It's just really good to see a player in the modern age who kind of moves so little and does so much.
Interesting. Efficiency of movement. Martin Yole revealing after the game that Dimitar Berbatov actually broke a rib in the first half, had an injection and played on. Wow, he genuinely was too lazy to go to hospital.
Yeah, I wonder how he broke that rib.
I don't know.
Yeah, because he can't move much. So.
I think he was
breathing too hard.
He was lying down on a chaise longue.
he
turned over slightly too.
Yeah.
Right.
Maybe his ribs are brittle with all that cigarette smoke, you know.
Oh, yeah. Possibly. Hey, another vision of the game is embodied by the fine fellas at Stoke, of course, Greg. They had a rip-roaring 0-0 with Sunderland. No one saw this one coming. One Guardian writer today saying Sunderland can make a legitimate claim to be the least watchable side in history. 9 games this season, they've mustered a grand total of 12 shots on goal, 8 of them from Stephen Fletcher. But you had quite enjoyed one aspect of this game.
Well, it was Tony Pulis thought after the game, his defender, I think it was Andy Wilkinson, he got absolutely clattered by Craig Gardner. It was a dreadful tackle. He got booked, could have been sent off Craig Gardner. And Andy Wilkinson got up and shook Craig Gardner's hand. And Tony Pulis afterwards says, that's the spirit of the game we like to see. You know, you should get up and shake a player's hand when something like that happens. And he said, well, not really. You know, it's like if someone was to elbow me out of the way on the train to get to the last empty seat or something, I wouldn't shake the fella's hand when he got there. It's like, it's not particularly nice when you get clattered by somebody. And right. Why should you get up and thank them for doing it, you know? Maybe, you know, he's trying to say you shouldn't dive, but you don't have to get up and thank the player for
absolutely
picking up the arse as well.
He said it was men playing, that's how men. This, he always says this, he's got this, I think he's got some of the outmoded idea of what men are like. And he's in the 70s, you know, men.
And he loved this game in which his own player, Mark Wilson, got his leg broke as well. Yeah. He had his leg broke in this game. There was elbows flying everywhere. It was a really nasty game to watch. Yeah.
Men who kind of smell and wear brown clothes and moustaches and don't talk much. That's men.
Mm. Cool. Andy Slee likes...
men will do that to you.
Well, Andy Slee is very much a fan of that kind of manly football. He says Pulis walks the talk. He also asks, is Martin O'Neill on borrowed time? £26 million spent.
I think also the worry for them is that some of the players who were really inspiring for them last year, like Cessignon and McLean, seem to have gone quite off the boil. So it's not only the players who've come in, but some of the players from last season
Miss Bentner, don't you?
Bentner was doing some missing of his own. You'll be surprised here. This weekend, he started for Juventus. Talk more about that later, perhaps. Arsenal, you mentioned them already, Amy, but a little reprise on that. They managed to beat the bottom team in the league. Hurrah. 1-0, helped by yet another red card for a Rangers player.
Yes.
What was going on there?
Well, he just went bonkers. Mm. I mean, it was actually a foul on him, and but the retaliation was absolutely... mental, really.
Should he not have got up and shook the fella's hand?
Yes, exactly.
If he'd have done that, he'd be fine, wouldn't he?
He would have been fine. There you go.
No, it was... I mean, I think I was with my brother, who's a QPR fan, and I think there was that sense of despair of just an act of...
From both of you, I would say, because even though you won, at the death, Rangers had several plum chances to equalise.
They did, especially the James Mackie chance where he drifted past just about everybody, and Vito Minoni came to the rescue. But I think the only thing that was notable about that game from an Arsenal perspective was Jack Wilshere coming back. And actually, I thought he was surprisingly sharp after such a long period out, and he looked, by a street, the classiest player on the pitch.
Which is saying a huge amount.
Mm. And Rangers have a decent midfield as well. You know, it wasn't like... I mean, they compete and they closed him down, and I thought he was great. He was a joy to watch.
Was it more or less entertaining than the AGM, producer Ben wants to know?
The AGM was far, far more entertaining.
Was it? Mm. Oh, okay, cool.
But in a predictable way. To be... it's quite depressing because it just reaffirms how much we've drifted away from having a football club and going into sort of pure business territory. And the people up on the plinth, on the board, there's very little sense that they've got any kind of connection with what a more traditional fan might be wanting from their football club. It was quite a disdainful atmosphere.
Right.
Are you raising the spectre of a traditional football fan, what they want from the club being a good thing? That the traditional football fan should be listened to and should decide what the model for the club is?
Well, I mean, it would be nice if they were at least, there was an idea that you're actually in it for some sporting gains predominantly, and that, the financial aspect is just a part of that rather than the only concern, which is the feeling that you get.
Are the fans not enjoying the Champions League nights and the...
Of course they are.
Playing the Premier League...
But it's Barney.
Barney.
No, I'm just interested because you're
Portsmouth. Trolling. If you want to bring it on to Portsmouth, we can, if you like. The supporters have become the preferred bidders for the takeover at that club. Very exciting news, no?
It's great news. Let's hope it works.
I hope it works too. If I had to cast a bit of doubt on fan ownership in England particularly, is that I don't know what they've valued Portsmouth at and how much each fan is going to have to put in there. But, I mean, fans are already paying a lot of money to go and watch the football teams with season right. tickets and all that kind of stuff. But if it is like £1,000 a share, as they're suggesting, I mean, that's a lot of money for people to stump up to buy into their club in these straitened times we're in. And the more, the bigger the club is, like Arsenal or, you know, Liverpool or whatever. I mean, I think when this was mooted for Liverpool, these shares were said to be £5,000 each, which is an extraordinary amount of money. And when this was done at Barcelona many years ago, football was affordable and the clubs weren't worth as much as what they are now. So that's why you unfortunately have all these big businessmen owning the clubs and not the fans. And until the bubble bursts, whenever that might be, I can't see it happening at the bigger clubs perhaps.
But the objection you always have to the people who do own football clubs is that only a complete lunatic would want to own a football club. You've got to be a megalomaniac, a nutcase. You've got to want to see your name in lights because you don't make any. There's no money in it. There is simply fame and glory and hobnobbing with people. Well, but at least at Arsenal, that is not the case.
Yes, but the main objection at the Arsenal shareholders meeting was that Stan Kroenke was asked directly if there was any plans for the shareholders to take any dividends out of the club, which has never happened before in the history of the club. And he evaded answering in such a way that, he could have said something which said, well, not at the moment, but, you know, never say never or whatever. But he just didn't. The way he approached it, they're reading between the lines, it looks like that's his plan. So, you know, there is a reason where somebody is looking to make money out of the club, it looks like to me.
Mm.
And so there is genuine reason for concern.
Right.
And that's nothing to do with how much you do or don't enjoy Champions League nights.
Profitable and well-run and lovely new stadium. I mean, it just seems football fans...
£13 for fish and chips at the Emirates, Barney. £13.
Don't go to the Emirates and buy fish and chips would be my response to that.
All right. Well, anyway, listen, can I just point out the 26 British clubs are in ownership or control by supporters' trusts, and over 100 trusts now have shareholdings in their clubs. So, you know, Portsmouth, the tip of the kind of mini ice cube thing. Nice. In other new face of football management structure-esque news, Man City. Some big changes there, eh? With Chicky Bergerstein, something along those lines, moving in. Is this Mancini being moved to the bed nearest the door?
Is it not the opposite in some ways, in that he had a real problem working with Brian Marwood?
Right.
And there was clear friction there in the summer. And Marwood's now academy director. He's not in charge of acquiring players. And in a way, you could see, if you wanted to, you could see it as a sop to Mancini. There's a new guy in there.
Right. Or you could see it as Man City getting in John the Baptist to pave the way for the...
Well, yeah, he might be a bit of both.
Hmm.
Didn't Bergerstein, is that how you say his name? Yeah. Didn't he didn't actually buy that many players at Barca, though, and kept the squad reasonably small, didn't he?
Yeah.
I just wondered whether... I know he probably will want to buy players, but I wondered whether he might actually get shut of a few as well and make the squad a little bit more manageable. Because Mancini seems to struggle when he's got too many things to play with.
Yeah. And it wasn't the best of games, was it, that Man City-Swansea? Am I right in thinking that Man City, were actually booed off when they exited after a goalless first half?
So I believe, yeah.
Extraordinary.
Expectant football fan.
And Micah Richards out for a sustained period of time. So they say. Now, well, there you go. That was the Premier League weekend. Other things happened as well, like Wigan's 2-1 victory over West Ham. But let's move on to other matters like ill-advised shirt sponsors. We talked about this last time. One or two listeners contributing some of their own. Shepast, Deportivo La Coruña being sponsored by Wanker. Toon Seagull, I seem to remember a game in 1999 at Withdean in which Brighton was sponsored by Skint and the opponent's Barnet was sponsored by Loaded. Class War, as one listener responded. And lots of people mentioning Arsenal and their Sega shirt, which has very, very unfortunate connotations in Italy. And I believe, as a result, they wore a different shirt when they played against Italian opposition. It refers to a kind of self-pleasure, onanistic activities, all that kind of thing. Hey, here was a great little meme that got running after. Dublin Roo was asking which football team Morrissey supports. Was it QPR? Dante Meets Bosch says he's seen Morrissey posing in West Ham and Chivas LA shirts. He's done a couple of Manchester United-related songs, Roy's Keane and 1958 Munich Air Disaster, of course. He then invents his own little list of Morrissey stroke Smith's football-related records, like the more you ignore me, the closer I get. Every day is like Sky Sports Super Sunday. That Joe Cole isn't funny anymore. This charming Mancini. He lets himself down with another Morrissey one, Francis Benali in Platforms. That's one for the purists. I start Ruprecht comes up with a gem. How soonest now? Oh, yeah. Yeah, and I started something I couldn't finish. That's for Gervinho. And Dublin Roo says, I keep mine hitting. Oh, Robertino's got some as well. Real Madrid around the fountain. Never had no one Everton. Shoplifters of the world united. Yeah, and more. Anyway, on it went, on it went. Somebody pick a band and we'll have fun with their back catalogue in this week's message boards. Another post, the plus one. I have a light-hearted weekend anecdote the pod team may find amusing. I watched the football on Saturday in a bar in the old town of Bratislava and overheard a conversation between the Irish expat publican and a Slovakian local about this very podcast. They were somewhat regular listeners and had a long discussion about their favourite panellists and so forth. I tell you what, that's got your attention, hasn't it? Right. In broken English, the Slovak kept referring to the host as the famous comedian. And after letting it pass a few times, the Irishman finally pulled him up and asked him what he meant. After much confusion, it emerged that this Slovak gentleman believed AC Jimbo and the British comedian Alexei Sale to be the very, very same person. An amusing case of mistaken identity, I'll say.
The Irishman he was having a conversation with wasn't Barry Glendening, was it?
It might have been. Yeah. It might have been. There was a pub involved, so hey, it's a possibility. One other thing to mention before we close up on part two is Edgar Davids. We marvelled at his arrival there at Barnet. He helped three clean sheets in a row. Yeah. And he's played 90 minutes for the last three games. Were those all three of those, yeah?
Yeah, I believe so, yeah.
Right,
yeah.
Okay.
He's, I think he said he was looking to kind of stamp his own kind of imprint on the game and get some of the players in that he kind of wants to play, and then he just takes their place, I think.
Right, nice. Midfield.
Yeah.
Well, they are 4 points from staying up at the bottom of League Two. They're still in last place for the moment. Right.
How many occasions in the history of football do you have where the manager is so plainly better than any of the players?
Mm. You thinking quite a few?
Well, it can't be that often.
Glenn Hoddle used to be a problem with Hoddle, didn't it? You know, yeah, can you do this? I can.
Yeah. Diego Maradona?
Yes.
There you go. Let's all have a think about that.
Cruyff, yeah. He was quite good, wasn't he?
He was. Bad.
Yeah. Dalglish.
Graham Taylor, very good at punting the ball. Incredibly powerful.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know, I'm just making that up.
Right. It's interesting though, isn't it? Very interesting. As is part three, in which Sid tells us all about Spanish stuff, and we hear about the weather in France and Italy. Part three begins with, you waited long enough for him, wait no more, Sid Lowe in Spain. Sid, how are you?
I'm all right, thanks, James. How are you?
Great. Where are you, Sid?
I am where I normally am. I'm in the back of a taxi.
Ooh.
And I'm sprinting. Well, not sprinting, obviously, because I'm in a taxi. I'm just sitting. Running down Valencia Street in Barcelona, just going past a very smart florist.
Oh, lovely. Okay. Nice detail. Where are you going and to give who what?
I won't physically be the person that hands it over, but I am going to the presentation of the Golden Shoe for Leo Messi as Europe's top scorer, because, of course, this is an award. Well, I say, of course, I suppose some people won't know this. It's an award that's handed out by an association of European football magazines, European ESM Group, the European Sports Magazine Group, and the representative of that in England is World Soccer. So I'm going on, representing World Soccer as part of the group that hand over the Golden Shoe.
Right, Golden Shoe for Leo Messi.
Yes.
And that's last year's, yes?
Yeah, it's the one for, no, I mean, this is the one that doesn't have any debate about it because it's purely mathematical.
Right.
It's added up. And it was interesting, listen, when Ronaldo won it last year, Ronaldo made that very point. He said, you know, this isn't subjective. It's not, you know, people having agendas. This is objective. This is about the statistics when he won it. And therefore, putting it above the Ballon d'Or. I suppose he partly did that because he wasn't winning the Ballon d'Or.
Yeah, I think you would. But you're right, it's a maths thing. It's not debatable, otherwise it would be a maths debate. And nobody wants
very good
that.
Yes.
Listen, he's got how many goals this year in 2012, Messi?
Oh, crikey, you throw me now. I think he's up 72, isn't he?
Well, I thought he was 72 before
Sorry, he's up to 74.
Yeah.
So he's one behind Pelé.
Exactly. Pelé's all-time annual number of goal scoring.
Not quite. No, Gerd Müller's got Gerd Müller from 70, oh God, which year? 74 maybe.
Yep, could be.
So he's still I think something like 11 or 12 behind Müller.
Oh right.
But
wow.
The rate he's scoring at. I mean, so he actually might not get there, but he is going to overtake Pelé's record. This is something I don't fully understand, is that for months now all the talk has been about Pelé's record.
Right.
And then all of a sudden it's like, oh yeah, oh, but there's this other one as well. Well, yeah. Surely you should be talking about the big one. That's like saying, I'll tell you what, that Linford Christie was fast 100 metres, but there's this guy called Usain Bolt. Oh yeah, forgot about him, sorry.
Yeah, interesting. Still an amazing performance from Messi, and he added, as we were just pointing out, another two this weekend in a 5-0 win for Barcelona.
Yeah, and a strange 5-0 win for Barcelona in that they were relatively comfortable, but it wasn't as fluid as it sometimes is. They played against a Rayo Vallecano side who play very, very high up the pitch, and therefore I think are a little bit vulnerable. Defensively, they've been awful pretty much all year. What was the best thing about this was Paco Gémez, the Rayo Vallecano coach, saying before the game, now this sounds funnier in English than it is in Spanish, because in Spanish it's just a phrase, a classic cliche, but he said, my face would fall off with shame if we faced Barcelona and played the same way that Celtic did. So he didn't, and they lost 5-0.
Now, Atletico Madrid are still neck and neck with Barcelona at the top. Another win for them, another goal for Falcao.
Yeah, 11 in a row for Falcao. Atletico Madrid on 25 points, the same number as Barcelona. They've got Real Madrid and Barcelona to come in the next month, and I suppose that will be the real test. But they're playing really, really well. It's now Atletico Madrid, because they won in the Europa League in midweek, have gone to 23 consecutive games without being beaten. It's the best run in their entire history. And they just look very, very solid, very, very difficult to beat. And Falcao continues to be amazing. Although, to be fair, Falcao got the third of three last night. So for once, it wasn't the goal that really, really mattered. Because normally with him, the great thing about him isn't just that he scores goals, but he scores the key ones.
Right. Is he still going to be there in February, Sid? And if he is there a chance that Atletico Madrid might break up that duopoly at the top and finish top two?
I honestly don't know the answer. I think there's no chance that, well, no chance, and of course there's always a chance. I think there's virtually no chance that he will be at Atletico Madrid next season. But I think there is a good chance that he'll stay beyond the transfer window. And if that happens, then I think that Atletico Madrid have a very, very good chance of finishing third, and a chance of finishing third quite a lot closer to Madrid and Barcelona than Valencia have done over the last
few years.
But
second, Sid, or in the top two?
No. I just don't see it. I mean, it's true that there's 8 points they've got as a lead over Real Madrid at the moment, which of course is significant, very significant. But I just don't see it. And you see Madrid and Barcelona both winning 5-0 this weekend, starting to get into a rhythm. And Atletico Madrid have won a lot of games by very fine margins. And I think there will be times when they get caught. And of course, if they get injuries to players, they can't assimilate those injuries as well as Madrid or Barcelona would be able to.
Sid Lowe in Spain. Now, in France, weather problems. Do you remember back at the start of the season when it was mildly warm? And they invented this kind of mid-half break so that everyone could get refreshed. It was very French. They literally stopped after 20 minutes because it was about 29 degrees, so everyone could have refreshments and stand around chatting. And then they got on with the rest of the first half and second half. This weekend, there was extreme weather in another sense. We had snow forcing one game to be abandoned and strong winds in Marseille, meaning that we couldn't bring you that Marseille-Lyon game that you'd all been looking forward to. And Lille had to play with their roof closed. It's the first time it's ever happened in France. Fascinating. Paris Saint-Germain still on top.
They have a roof on their stadium.
Yeah.
But they've never used it before.
I don't know. It seems strange, doesn't it?
It seems a bit odd.
Well, they used it this time. I think it must be a new roof.
Yeah.
But I didn't do enough research on that. Sorry, Barney. the good news was that instead of doing the Marseille-Lyon game, we did an absolutely terrific match. From the Serie A. Sunday night's clash between Roma and Udinese. A lot of excitement about this because, Roma under Zdeněk Zeman are a bit mad. You know, they score loads of goals or they concede lots of goals, but, you know, there's always lots of goals, basically. And they romped to a 2-0 lead with this young Argentine starlet called Eric Lamela scoring both. First, absolutely amazing goal. Amazing. He was out by the touchline and there were a couple of players between him and he just kind of tiptoed his way, much as you would if you were trying to exit you know, a party the morning after, and the sitting room was full of kind of drunken, slumbering bodies. He could stand it, picked his way through and exited through the front door and stuck the ball in the net. And, yeah, so Roma at this point were all over Udinese, and they somehow ended up losing 3-2, though, after a penalty was given at the end. And Di Natale, who scored a mind-boggling goal of his own to make it 2-2, and then did a little Panenka or Totti chip, or Pirlo chip, if you like, and took all 3 points. That mind-boggling goal that I refer to of Di Natale's was basically standing in front of the goal, and this ball comes towards him, and instead of just tapping it in, he spins away from the goal to enable himself to be able to backheel it in. Really, really interesting.
It's ostentatious.
It is a bit, but you kind of...
He is a very good player.
He is a very good player, as you know, Greg.
All too well.
Anyway, all sorts of other things happened in Italy. Greg, you were asking about that Catania goal because refereeing decisions, yeah.
He wasn't even level. He was about a yard behind the defender.
Well, this was Catania, who've had a bit of a rotten run, but in the past have been good, especially against the big sides at home. And I felt moved to tweet that I thought they were actually going to end Juve's 47-game unbeaten streak. Lo and behold, they scored a fine goal midway through the first half, only for the referees to disallow it, for really bizarre. The curious thing about it was the referee comes over to talk to the linesman, and the linesman appears to be then talking to the official behind the goal, which they have in Serie A, and it seems to be his decision that certainly there's not been any contradiction of this. Anyway, the referees have kind of designator bloke, the guy who runs the referees, has apologised for the whole thing, but it means that Juve are now 48 games unbeaten and are still on top. Inter, Barney?
You know what they say, these things... Even themselves out. Ever several corruption scandals, demotions, fines, and people being sacked. It all evens itself out.
it's just one of those things, you know. I think it is genuinely just one of those things, but it does seem to happen more to the little sides than the biggies. Because, of course, Juve's goal was more than a hint offside about that. But strangely, it was given. Yeah. Anyway, right, so they won 1-0. Inter had 7 straight wins. They are right behind them. Actually, they're in third place. Napoli are in between. And Lazio got beaten. Hey, Luca Toni, remember him? He scored a brilliant goal. Spun and shot. He's 36 or something, I think, Luca Toni. But he still got it.
I saw him playing in the UAE.
Did you?
Yeah, playing for the team managed by Walter Zenger.
Oh, there you go.
Against another team in front of about 200 people.
Right.
Sweating profusely as always. I've never seen a man drip so much. He's like a...
Imagine if they had a World Cup
ecosystem. Yeah. Well, indeed. But he looked like he just had given up. He walked.
Right.
He didn't run.
No, he's back.
He's back, is he?
He's gassed and fired up and stuff.
Talking of other ex-Serie A strikers who went off to foreign pastures, I saw that David Trezeguet got to play in the Super Classico over the weekend.
Oh, did he?
Which was, I think was a 2-2 draw between Boca and River.
Did one of the managers get a yellow card for bringing his team out late?
I don't know, but there was trouble. I did read that there was trouble, and there was a quite extraordinary quote from somebody official saying something along the lines of, yes, we had some trouble and 25 people were arrested, but nobody died.
Yeah.
I still love the story of Trezeguet going back to play in for his favourite club in Argentina, when he could easily have gone to play in the UAE or somewhere like that and got to put more money at the end of his career.
Is this the game where there was a delay because there was an enormous pig? Fans of...
Absolutely right.
Intriguing stuff. Creative,
the pig was wearing a Boca shirt, is that right?
They had to remove the pig.
Remove the pig.
Deemed offensive.
Right. From the pitch or...?
No, well, it was in the... I think it was being hoist in the stands.
Okay. Yeah, it does sound an extraordinary match.
Inflammatory.
As I say, I believe one of the managers got a yellow card for the team coming out late. Interesting. Well, I don't know if it's of any interest, but one thing that did strike me on Sunday night is we had Mikel Silvestri, and he was meant to be doing the French game, but it turned out it was quite relevant that he was there for the Roma match, because he played in Serie A 98-99 season with Inter. And one of the most amazing games I ever saw in Italy was a game at the Stadio Olimpico with Zeman's Roma, the first time that Zeman was at Roma, in which they scored 4 goals against Inter but still lost 5-4. Anyway, we're talking about that because Silvestri actually played in that match. He couldn't remember a thing about it. But he started to talk about one or two of the players that he had in the squad. Get this for a squad lineup: Pagliuca in goal, not bad. Beppe Bergami, Zio Bergami, legend. Zanetti, yeah. Pirlo, Rakoba, Djorkaeff, Aaron Winter, Roberto Baggio, El Cholo Simeone, Zamorano, Paulo Sousa, and how about this, Ronaldo. All in one team. And they still only finished 8th in the table. It's astonishing, isn't it? It is worth pointing out, Roy Hodgson was among the managers there that season. They went through four managers. They started off with Gigi Simeone, fired him on the day that he received the Manager of the Year award, and then went to Michele Lucescu, who's, you know, still very much doing the business, as anyone who saw Shakhtar Chelsea can attest. And then they went to the goalkeeping manager, fired him, got in Uncle Roy, and scraped to eighth place. And oh, Taribo West, there you go, he was there as well.
Oh, that might explain the the four goals he conceded then.
Crazy times, crazy, crazy times. Anyway, Mikel Silvestri, anyway, according to producer Ben, well, he didn't mention this last night, has just signed for an Indian team. He said he was training with Manchester United. That's obviously why. Fascinating, lovely chap. But it's just made me think, my word, how times have changed. Can you imagine getting all those in together?
But you can always look back and look at a squad list and think, wow, because you remember all those players at their best, don't you?
I mean, yeah, fair enough.
I'm imagining, I mean, you know, yeah, Brakoba, brilliant player. But, yeah. You know.
Anyway. Yeah, Pirlo at the time was only about 12. Zanetti was already 35, I think. Yeah, anyway.
I think that was probably the era in Italian football, particularly with, you know, around that time with Inter, where they were just buying more and more and more players. And almost the more they did, the worse the atmosphere was in the squad.
And I think it was some alienation around there, wasn't there? I remember unhappy teams. That was an unhappy
Inter. Yes, it was an example exactly.
Of when, and yet, when I said to Mikhail, I said, well, he's played in a lot of clubs in different places. I said, where did you have the most fun? He said, Inter.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. I mean, you can imagine being out on the training field with Ronaldo, Roberto Baggio, Chukayev.
Zamorano, he's Zamorano. One of my favourite players. Do you remember that World Cup game with him and Sales when they were singing the Chilean national anthem? I think it was against Brazil. Mm. I've never seen anybody. It was like the X Factor audition. I mean, the fury and the passion was incredible.
Right.
He's a wonderful, wonderful guy.
Him and Buffon could have a national anthem sing-off, couldn't he?
Yeah. Well, Buffon, very patriotic man.
Yeah. Mm. And as producer Ben wants to point out, Zamorano also famous for his shirt, which was the 1+8. So he could have a 9, which Ronaldo already had the 9. He was also, I believe I'm right in saying, after USA 94, Madonna came out and said, hey, this football business, some of the players are quite dishy. I really, really like Zamorano.
Well,
and,
Zenga.
Yeah. Oh, Zenga as well? Really?
Yeah, it's a notch on the bedpost.
Crikey. There you go, eh? Tell you what, you saved a real gem for the end of today's
podcast. I thought everybody knew that.
I didn't know that.
Walter, I mean, you know, he's a very intimidating, impressive man.
Well, at the time, he was a massive, he was a charismatic star of that Italy side, huh?
Yeah, he's had a few problems since. Did I ever tell you my Walter Zenga story?
Go ahead. If it's anywhere near as good as your Hadaway story, we're in for a treat.
Well, it's just... when I was at this game in the UAE, he was the manager of one of the teams, and he was being criticised. They're quite a big spending team. They've been slightly underperforming. He'd been criticised in the press conference afterwards by some local guy, and he went absolutely ballistic. And he said, "You're nothing. You know nothing about. Get out of here. You're nobody. What have you ever done? Leave the room." And this guy was basically so scared. I mean, I was terrified. This guy was so scared he left the room, and I was in there. I was very scared. I asked him a question at one point, and he just told me I was in England. And I said, "Why didn't you get more crosses into Tony?" He said, oh, typical English long ball rubbish. But he obviously sort of basically thought he could say whatever he wants, and no one's going to know he's in the UAE. So I immediately started tweeting. You know, he's lost his mind.
Right.
Amazing scenes in Bust Up with Zenga. And I didn't think anything more about it. I got a few sort of tweets back from people saying, oh, yeah, you know, Walter, he was a bit like that in the States, you know, sort of famously volatile. And the next morning I woke up and I had a tweet from Walter Zenga saying, I see you've been talking about me. I need to meet you and discuss this. At which point I kind of immediately deleted all my tweets, and it was very frightening, you know. And luckily on Twitter there's this thing which says it tells you where people are.
Oh,
and so I did find his location, and I was in Abu Dhabi and he was in Dubai. He was actually on one of the palms of that fake palm island, according to the location thing.
Didn't know you could do that.
But I was at a cricket match. I was reporting on a cricket match, and I spent the whole match checking where Walter Zenga was, and he was moving around the UAE wanting to know if he was going to turn up banging at the door.
That's
any second.
A scene in Alien where you should look at the two dots and how close
it is. Well, yeah, it was like that, but his dot remained on this palm frond for most of the time I was there. And I sent him one back and said, don't worry about it.
Do you know where he is now, buddy?
No, I haven't checked for at least 5 or 10 minutes. I better have a look now.
All right. Well, you best keep moving then. We conclude today's pod with that. We'll be back on Thursday with more delights. And I look forward, of course, to the weekend's action. In the meantime, many thanks to producer Ben, Greg Ruffley, Amy Lawrence and Barney Roney. And you have a super week. See you on Thursday.